1. The Poor Woman. On the evening news of 7th of August 2023, Erin Patterson was standing in front of her red SUV, 9 days after the fateful lunch that had killed three of her in-laws, a grey knit jumper and the black strap of a shoulder bag were the only armour she had against a pride of Victoria's hungriest journos. She had been cornered in her own driveway coming home from shopping at Woolworths and had chosen, momentarily, to face the cameras. "I'm so devastated by what's happened," she declared, choking with tears. She could not fathom what had happened. These people meant so much to her. She loved them. She could not believe this had happened, and she was so sorry. She couldn't believe Ian and Heather and Gail had lost their lives. Gail was like a mother to her, because her own mum had died 4 years earlier. It was already known that the three victims had been poisoned with a meal of beef Wellington that had included death cap mushrooms, and the suited reporter solemnly inquired where the mushrooms had come from. Erin, however, stoically ignored that question and walked to her front door, with the camera crew scuttling after her. In the background, there was a trim, recently mulched garden bed with artfully landscaped ceilings. Quite a nice house and garden, really. Next, the reporter told Erin that the police already considered her a suspect. Did she have anything to say about that? Yes, she hadn't done anything. She loved Gail and Ian and Heather, and she was devastated they were gone, and she hoped with every fibre of her being that Don pulled through. She unlocked her front door and quickly stepped through to the safety of her living room. In those last few frames, however, a viewer such as, well, me, could glimpse her full outfit. She had teamed the grey jumper with white pants and what looked like brown Birkenstocks or some sort of sandal, worn with socks. Interesting choice, but no judgment. "Did you eat the same meal?" was Mr. Suit's last grab as Erin closed the front door. Again, no answer. And that was the end of the doorstop interview. Cut. At the time, I didn't appreciate the staying power of that final, deceptively simple query. Had she eaten the same meal? It would remain a fiercely debated question, mostly by people whose opinions were based on nothing more than opinion, for at least 2 years. I did, however, notice that Erin had mixed up her names. I had been curious enough to read the very early reports of this weird event and knew that it wasn't Ian who had died. It was Don who had died, and it was Ian who was fighting for his life. But to me, all that did was speak to how rattled she was. Australian criminal history was hardly short of other women famously thrown under the bus in similar circumstances. Lindy Chamberlain, Joanne Lees, Kathleen Folbig. They had all claimed they were innocent, only to have a rabid public toss those claims into the bin. Before their trials, all three of them had been widely assumed to be complicit or guilty in some way, and two of them had initially been convicted, before their convictions were later quashed. Over the next 18 months, therefore, whenever I tumbled beyond the event horizon and into the mushroom case, I found myself passionately advocating for an open mind, particularly after Erin had been arrested and charged with 3 counts of murder and 4 counts of attempted murder. That had happened in early November of 2023, around 3 months after that first doorstop interview. Since then, it seemed a second glass of anything, at any gathering, anywhere, became a license to damn Erin Patterson. By then, the police had also revealed how they had recovered the food dehydrator Erin had secretly thrown out just a few days after the lunch. That was now common knowledge. Hence, she was obviously a murderer. We had been given 2 dots on a page, and most of us had connected those dots by immediately drawing a witch. In the Middle Ages, she would have been dragged out and burned at the stake, no more questions asked. Thousands of conversations all around the country, indeed the world, needed little more than a dried porcini to become lost in the addictive fascination with cunning female killers. But Erin kept claiming it was a tragic accident. And to my mind at least, there were some good reasons to believe this might be true. First, see the examples. Why don't we start from a position of at least believing a person might be telling the truth when they say they are innocent? Do we have to leap to condemnation on little more than how they look or how they react, or don't react, to an incredibly traumatic situation in which they suddenly find themselves? How would you react? And don't say you know, because I don't think you do. Until you are in that sort of a situation, no one does. Second, was there any motive? And by any, I mean literally anything. Any reason at all to kill her children's grandparents? There didn't appear to be. And third, if it was murder, then it had to be a premeditated act and must have taken some planning. Given that, wouldn't you think Erin would have taken a moment to ask herself a couple of pertinent questions such as, oh, I don't know, can I get away with this? It was very hard to believe that Erin had not asked herself that question. She must have had plenty of time. Cooking a beef Wellington lunch had not been a violent act done in a split second. Nor had there been a rage of passion in which rational thinking had been drowned in a sea of fury. If it was murder, it must have been calculated. And a person who can calculate like that can also surely calculate past the event and have a plan to deflect suspicion away from themselves. And if Erin could have developed such a plan, why had she so conspicuously not? Given those three reservations, didn't the tragic accident scenario, on the face of it, make as much sense as intentional murder? And shouldn't we have waited until we had all the facts before going any further? By August 2024, we were thrilled to hear the trial was actually going to be held here in Morwell, with a scheduled start date of the 28th of April 2025. Erin's guilt or innocence had become an even hotter topic. I argued the tragic accident scenario so many times that I began to believe it really was more likely, and I gained a small reputation among my own circle of friends as the only Erin defender they knew, which I didn't mind. Someone in the grandstand had to wear her colours. But in February 2025, I lost my spot in the grandstand. I received a letter, on paper, in the mail, a real old-fashioned letter, saying I had been selected for jury duty in the Latrobe Valley District, covering five circuit sittings of the Supreme and County Courts between 28th of April and the 1st of August. 28th of April? Good heavens, that was the start date of the Patterson trial. I was probably one of thousands, but still, I had been selected to be in the pool from which the jury in the Erin Patterson trial would be chosen. Stay calm, I told myself. I knew Tony could cover my shifts. He had someone he called in when I went on holidays or whatever. He'd be fine. I had that issue covered. And as for the other eligibility requirements, well, I wasn't sick. I didn't have to travel far. I spoke English and I didn't work in the administration of justice. I am a picture framer. Although hopefully for a few weeks at least, if I made it through, I'd also be a juror in one of the most famous Australian trials ever. That'd be something for the grandkids.